Good day, friends, and thanks for hopping on board here. I'm Margo McMillan, host of Farm and Fiddle, the radio program that celebrates and explores rural life for today and tomorrow. It's been a long time since I've mounted a Farm and Fiddle podcast, but in 2024, many things are happening that affect the rural life that we enjoy so much here in mid-Missouri. And February is the month when we like to talk to people who are active in working on policies coming our way. This podcast features a conversation with Tim Gibbons of Missouri Rural Crisis Center. Missouri Rural Crisis Center has been in existence for 40 years, more than 40 years, working with farmers that want to stay on the land. They were founded when giant livestock facilities moved in to take over land, water, and markets that traditional farmers depend on. The conversation with Tim Gibbons aired on February 28th, then stayed on the web at kopn.org for 2 weeks, and I feel it deserves a longer life, hence the podcast. Other interviews in this February 2024 series include James Owen of Renew Missouri, a group working for renewable energy in Missouri, and a conversation with Susan Burns of Mid-Missouri Landowners Association, working to bring some regulation to the solar and wind industries that are taking over farmland. And Melissa Vatterott, Policy Director of Missouri Coalition for the Environment. So, this conversation is with Tim Gibbons. You can learn more on his website at Missouri Rural Crisis Center. So, here goes. Thanks for listening. Maybe we could just start with you talking a little bit about Missouri Rural Crisis Center, where you work, and what you guys do, just a little background.
Thank you, Margo. It's always good to see you as well and visit with you about these important issues. Like you said, I'm Tim Gibbons. I'm with the Missouri Rural Crisis Center. MRCC is a statewide farm and rural membership organization. We've been around since 1985. We developed out of the farmers organizing during the 80s farm crisis, and sort of MRCC came about ad hoc out of that organizing. Organizing was happening before 1985 during a very challenging time in rural communities and in farm economies. And since we started in 1985, our goal is to, first of all, listen first, understand the history, understand the policy of where we are and how we got here, and then present solutions based upon, you know, the knowledge that we have from our membership and from, you know, rural Missouri and rural America at large. But I just want to stress also understanding the history, understanding the policies that got us here, because there's this narrative of inevitability that is constantly sown throughout corporate dominant narrative media. Like, we're here because this is the only place we could be. This is the place where we're supposed to be, just cause and effect, when the reality is it's because of very specific policies that were enacted or were not enacted, oftentimes by special interests and corporate lobbyists, not really a democracy, but more a democratic process, in large part, that's controlled by special interests. So there's a lot of issues we're working on right now. Our main goal is to support independent family farmers, independent livestock producers, but also vibrant rural communities, keeping wealth in our communities, and then, you know, working with our members to ensure that the policies are there to make that possible.
My goodness, you've just said, I mean, that's a dissertation right there. Everything you've said is, you've given me, I'm going to try not to go down any of those rabbit holes, but remembering that history since 1985, you are correct. It's been a matter of one industrial policy after another, making incursion into rural communities and into rural life and into, of course, what farmers do.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, not to leave out consumers and, you know, clean water and air and national security and, you know, the livability of our planet. So these are big issues we're talking about here. Our lane is generally farm, food, and agriculture, but you can sort of expand this analysis to a lot of different industries, a lot of things that affect all of our lives. It's interesting work we do, and making those connections, I think, is really important for us, but also really important for the our value-based narrative at large.
Mm-hmm. Right. It touches everything: human health, animal health, et cetera.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now the legislature's in session here in Missouri again, and I wonder
they're sort of in session. I mean, they're sort of in session. There's not much going on down there. So,
yeah, I'd like you to talk about that, because I know there were a lot of bills filed at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so it looked like, whoa, this is going to be amazing. But why is it stalling? How is it stalling? What are you seeing?
I believe it's a record amount of bills, both pre-filed and filed to this time. Mm-hmm. It is an election year, so bills get filed for political posturing. So that's part of it. The ironic thing is that none of those bills are really doing anything right now, because the legislatures, and specifically the Senate side of the building, was really in disarray and dysfunction for the entire month of January, the majority of the month of February. I don't want to get into the sort of theater that's going on down there, but just to say that the body down there isn't functioning and things aren't really getting done. So it's ironic that, a record number of bills have been introduced, but none of them are really moving anywhere other than, the initiative petition. Senate joint resolution just got passed out of the Senate after a Democratic filibuster. That's the only bill I think that's moved out of the Senate really so far. So, but there are bills that we're working on, both good bills and bad bills. So one thing that we have to, make sure that we do, even during dysfunction in that building, is to continue to advocate for good government and good policy.
Okay, specifically the initiative petition bill, you said just moved out of
Out of the Senate.
It moved out of the Senate?
It did, yes.
Okay.
So it's on its way to the House right now.
Uh-huh. Could you talk a little bit about that? What's in it?
There's a lot of irony in this conversation that we're going to talk about. What the initiative petition Senate joint resolution, and there's multiple bills that have been introduced, but I think one is moving, is to make it more difficult for Missourians to pass our own laws. I think it's sort of ironic because our Senate is at a standstill, and the body down there in general is at a standstill because they can't get their ducks in a row. And the initiative petition process has been an avenue for Missouri citizens to get things put into law that the Missouri legislature either doesn't have the political will, the capacity, doesn't want to do, even though the populace at large is in favor of some things, out here and in favor of some policies that we need to get passed to make all of our lives better. So it's ironic that they're passing a bill that's going to make it more difficult for us, Missouri citizenry, to pass laws while they're at a standstill because they can't do anything because of the dysfunction that they're doing. I think it also tangentially connects with our new system of electing our presidential candidates now, which is now it passed in 2022. It's now like a caucus system with the Republicans and the Democrats. It's like a voting, mail voting, but there's some sort of caucusness to it. And then the Libertarians are having a meeting, which is also getting in the way of people being able to take part in direct democracy. There's a lot of people out there that can't go to the meeting in their county from 9 to noon in order to make their voice heard relative to the presidential election. So there's just all these ways that it seems like the Missouri legislature is making it more difficult for the citizenry to take part in the democratic process while they can't get much, if anything, done other than taking away our right to, pass laws.
This is exactly what it sounds like and what it seems like is happening. And at a time when there are so many really huge issues to be weighed in on that need our human input. Well, it sounds like really you guys are just kind of keeping your eyes open on it and not on everything and not really acting on any particular bills?
We were down at the Capitol last Tuesday.
Okay.
The Tuesday before the last Tuesday. We had farmers and members down there. We're just doing some small sort of strategic lobby days at the Capitol. We are opposing and supporting some bills. The bills either center around protecting or taking protections away from Missouri's water system and clean water, and then foreign corporate ownership of Missouri farmland.
Mm-hmm.
There are bills that have been introduced that will take protections away from our water. One of our main arguments is, historically in Missouri, one thing that we've had that has been an advantage has been access to abundant clean water. Now, we've had a couple droughts in 22 and 23, which is impacting the quantity of our water. But also there's, water scarcity issues out west with the aquifers being drained dry. And, California, even though we've seen some major rain events there recently, they've been in a drought. And if you look sort of at world maps of water, there's water scarcity issues all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that we should be doing here at Missouri, both for the benefit of family farmers, rural communities, urban communities, the livability of our state, is first off, we should not be taking protections away from protecting our water, but we should be creating protections. It's an advantage we have. And I think looking into the future, unfortunately, it's going to be an even bigger advantage because of these water scarcity and also dirty water issues that we're seeing both in our country, but also around our world. So there's just to be more specific, there was a bill that was introduced in the House that was going to redefine water contaminant source by taking away non-point sources as ways to contaminate water. Non-point source, as we know here at MRCC and our members know, is also the application of factory farm waste. So we have to ensure that factory farm waste doesn't get into our water system. I think, unfortunately, we use our friends to the north as an example of why we don't want factory farms here in Missouri in the first place, but we also need to be accountable to our water. So that was in the House. There's some bills in the House and the Senate that are going to change the definition of waters of the state, which would then just take water sources in our state and say that they're not protected. That's a big deal as well. So, like I said, we need to be creating more protections. There are a couple good bills that are meant to protect our water. Now they're reactive, and they're reactive specifically to this corporation that I believe is based out of Arkansas called Denali Water Solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they aggregate sort of waste from different industries, and then they put it in a lagoon and they spread it on land. Seemingly, the reason why they're attempting to do it, there was a Denali outfit down in Southwest Missouri, and then they were attempting to build another lagoon in Randolph County, which is just north of where we're sitting right now.
Mm-hmm.
In Boone County. It's our neighbor to the north. Moberly's in Randolph County.
Moberly, yeah.
And people weren't very happy about it. Rural folks weren't happy about being dumped on. So there are some bills to strengthen the protections from outfits like Denali Water Solutions, which are, once again, aggregating industrial waste and spreading it on farmland.
So can you give us some bill numbers so that people can look them up?
Yeah, totally. The bad waters of the state bill that are attempting to redefine waters of the state and take different water sources out of the definition of waters of the state. We must remember that all water is connected, by and large. Mm-hmm. Those bills are House Bill 1691 and Senate Bill 981.
Okay.
The bad bill that is trying to redefine water contaminant source and say that it doesn't come from non-point sources Mm-hmm. Which is the vast majority of point sources we have, is non-point source, is House Bill 2561. And then the bills meant to protect water and hold Denali accountable to our water and to Missourians is our House Bill 2134 and 1956. Those bills have been combined in the House committee. So those are together. And then Senate Bill 13.
Did they get a new number when they were combined?
No, they're just, it's called House Bill 2134 and 1956.
Oh, okay.
So they're just combined.
Okay.
And then Senate Bill 1369.
1369. 69,
excuse me.
69, okay. Right. Okay. And just the fact that you mentioned the drought right now, it makes this even more crucial that we protect the water that we've got that farmers can use.
And you are listening to KOPN Columbia. This is Farm and Fiddle. I'm Margo McMillan. And this is an interview with Tim Gibbons of Missouri Rural Crisis Center. Next, I asked him to talk about something that has come up repeatedly in the last few years at the legislature, and that is the foreign ownership of Missouri farmland.
Multiple bills have been introduced.
Okay.
None of them are really moving at this moment. I think it's more because of the legislative dysfunction that's going on. There are some bills that are front runners that we are told, but I don't want to get into speculation. But what those bills do, and I could just give the history of it. Since the late 70s, Missouri always had a law that said foreign corporations can't own Missouri farmland. In 2013, some language got stuck onto an ag omnibus bill at the end of the legislative session. The language was never standalone, meaning it was never a standalone bill, and it was never heard in a committee. It got stuck onto an omnibus bill and a substitute. And, you know, we saw the bill, we saw the language, we're like, what is that about? Passed. And then less than a month after the legislative session was over, and that was the last couple of weeks of the legislative session, Smithfield got bought by Shineway, which is a Chinese, they're now called WH Group. They're a Chinese multinational meat packer. And when they bought Smithfield, they bought 25% of the U.S. pork market. They also bought over 40,000 acres of Missouri farmland because Smithfield owned operations up in North Missouri. So that language enabled Smithfield to get bought by a Chinese multinational corporation. That same year, because we figured that out right quick when we saw what happened with Shineway and Smithfield, we got Governor Nixon at the time to veto the bill because of these issues. And then during the veto session, the legislature overrode that veto to make that become law, even though at that time they knew what was going on. It's been an issue ever since then. We've gotten bills introduced almost every year since 2013 to bring it back down to zero. We, I believe, only got one or two hearings over the years, but as of last year, all of a sudden the party in power in Jefferson City all of a sudden cares about it. It's become a political issue now, so they feel like they have to deal with it. Although, you know, last year a lot of bills got introduced. It got almost across the finish line, and then House leadership killed the bill. This year, you know, we're still going to be working hard to make sure that this bill passes and that foreign corporations can't own Missouri farmland. It only makes sense.
Yeah.
So those are the issues around foreign ownership. That's the brief history around foreign ownership. There's a lot of other things that probably happened between 2013 and now, but that's the history that we know.
It stymies me why anybody would be for foreign ownership of land, either on either side of the aisle. But do you have?
I just think it shows, Margo. It's a really good bad example of how special interests have undue influence over our laws in our state legislature and our process and system in general. I mean, that's the thing that we're really fighting for here at MRCC is real democracy. We have a democratic process right now that is unfortunately controlled by, in large part controlled by, shiny-shoed lobbyists and politics and a corporate narrative that's not based upon truth. But here at MRCC, we know the history, we know how we got here, we know how to get out, and we're really fighting for, you know, representative democracy.
So are there bill numbers you can give us that are, that we could...
Margo, there are so many bills.
Oh,
there's
on
so,
foreign
I mean,
ownership, really?
For foreign ownership, yeah. Oh. I mean, like I said, it's also an election year. And this is a big issue. And MRCC has made it a big issue over the last decade.
You guys have.
You're the both, only not only in the legislature, but out here in the countryside, because it's something that people care about.
Sure.
You know, what we do is we listen first and then we react to what, you know, what people say. And this is a big issue to people. So getting into the bill numbers at this point, I think wouldn't make much sense. But when it does start moving, like sign up, go on our website, sign up to get involved. You'll go get on our action alert email list, and then you can be up to date on not only these bills that pertain to water, but also bills that pertain to foreign ownership of farmland, and also the work that we're doing at the federal level.
Yeah, go ahead and just kind of give us an elevator speech on the federal.
Well, 2023 was supposed to be a farm bill year. The farm bill happens every five-ish years. And the farm bill is the policy that largely creates how our commodity farm system works. There's also other parts of the farm bill that work within local food or community development or housing. There's other parts that happen in the farm bill. Also, SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is food stamps, is part of the farm bill. But nonetheless, it didn't happen in 2023. There's also happens to be severe dysfunction at the federal level, which is intentional. Dysfunction is really good for corporate interest, actually, because status quo, the way that they've written the system, is good for them. But that means 2024 is now a farm bill year as well. We know what we need in the farm bill in order to ensure that family farmers and rural communities can continue to be vibrant, that family farmers can continue to exist. And so we'll be working on a lot of policies relative to the farm bill, similar to what we were doing in 2023. But one new bit of information that came out just, I think, last week was the 2022 census information just came out.
And at this point, Tim Gibbons is talking about a federal census of farms conducted by USDA.
And the census happens every 5 years as well. It does. It's not five-ish. It happens every 5 years. So the last census was 2017. This one is 2022. And distressing numbers. I mean, really, really distressing numbers. And it shows that what we're talking about, what's happening out here, what we're seeing, what we're hearing, is happening at a national level. And I'll just get into it just right quick. Just a few numbers that I think are important. In the United States, we lost 142,000 farms from 2017 to 2022. Oh. In the U.S., we lost 150,000 cattle operations from 2017 to 2022. In Missouri, we lost 7,500 farms in the last 5 years, and we lost 10,000 cattle operations from 2017 to 2022. So in 2017, we had 53,500 cattle operations. Now we've got 43,500 cattle operations. Missouri is a cattle state. We're a cow-calf state, and we're second only to Texas relative to number of cattle operations, and it's a huge economic driver. And what this sort of shows is not only is what we're saying happening is happening, which is farmers are getting paid less. It's harder to pass the farm on down to the next generation. Farmers are getting out. They don't see that future, you know, in farming, because you have to be able to make money within specifically in the cattle market to stay on the farm and continue raising cattle. But it also echoes what we know happened in the 90s with the hog industry. And Rhonda, our executive director, who's a cattle farmer from North Howard County, wrote a piece that ran in the Missouri Independent that is titled The History of the Hog Industry and How to Save the Cattle Industry. And I recommend everybody just Google that. The history of the hog industry and how we can save the cattle industry, because what we're saying isn't based upon theory. It's based upon something that we know and we saw happen in the 90s to the hog industry. And that's 90% of U.S. hog farmers put out of business in one generation through corporate control, through overproduction, through vertical integration, through industrialization, all due to the fact that Our legislatures and our federal elected representatives in that system is being controlled by special corporate interests. You know, here at MRCC in 1993, we started Patchwork Family Farms as a response to the corporate takeover, as an alternative so that farmers could continue to raise hogs the traditional way and get paid a price. And a price is both, you know, cost of production, what it costs to raise that hog, plus a living wage on top of it. We bring in hogs, we bring them to small packing plants, and then we distribute in mid-Missouri. At the same time that we were starting Patchwork, we were lobbying our federal government saying, hey, you need to enforce antitrust laws. You need to stop packers from owning livestock. You need to, you know, stop vertical integration and huge industrialization. They didn't do any of it. They actually funded it in large part through our guaranteed loan process, through conservation programs like EQIP, through below cost of production feed that comes from commodity grown, you know, corn and beans, where government and now government sponsored insurance is sort of making up the difference, which is keeping farmers sort of whole. But that gives the factory farm and processing industries cheap inputs. So, you know, there's all these things that we've been fighting for in the hog industry in the 90s. They didn't do it. All the hog farmers got put out of business. And now we're fighting for very similar things relative to the cattle industry. And I think what we're seeing relative to the census is that, unfortunately, we're right. And that's why it being a farm bill year and seeing these numbers is a really big deal.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much. I guess we should... say how people can learn more. Tell us what your website is. And
yeah, just you can Google Missouri Rural Crisis Center. It's morural.org, morural.org. You can email me, timgibbons@morural.org, or you can just call me 573-449-1336. If you just want to, you know, if you want to join, sign up to get involved, but even if you just want to chat and talk about things. You know, that's what we're here for. One of my mottos is, if we're not learning, we're not living, and we learn from each other. So, and use me as a resource and use us as a resource for issues that you care about and you're working on as well. So whatever we can do to help, that's what we're here for. We're all in this together, and we appreciate all of you and Margo.
And that was a conversation with Tim Gibbons of Missouri Rural Crisis Center, working on issues affecting farmers who want to stay on the land. This is Margo McMillan reminding you that Farm and Fiddle airs on Wednesday evenings from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time on KOPN 89.5 FM in Columbia, Missouri, and KOPN.org on the World Wide Web. Other podcasts for February 2024 are with activists James Owen, Executive Director of Renew Missouri, working on renewable energy issues in our state. Susan Burns, founder of Mid-Missouri Landowners Alliance, who works to bring some regulation to solar and wind energy producers as they come into Missouri and ship energy out to the East Coasts. And Melissa Vatterott, Policy Director for Missouri Coalition for the Environment, working to preserve Missouri's good water. A big thank you to all of these activists working tirelessly to help rural areas. And this is Margo McMillan saying thank you for listening.